we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
The less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio, CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, March the 18th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I'm joined here today by our co-hosts, Elise Jacobson.
Hi.
And Caroline Carnery.
Hi, everyone.
Welcome, everyone. March 20th in 2 days is Meet Out Day, and today is our fourth annual Meet Out themed show. To start the show, we have an interview with a local organization who is working to spread the message of eating vegan throughout the city. You may have seen the bus ads already in Vancouver, which exhibit a beautiful picture of a pig and the words goveg.ca, every meal matters. Emily Pickett from the Vancouver Humane Society will be on the show shortly to tell us about this new campaign, which encourages individuals to go veg. Plus, VHS has been instrumental in getting into secondary and post-secondary schools to instigate Meatless Mondays in the cafeterias. And she'll also tell us about this campaign and how individuals like yourselves can get involved. And for our feature interview, we'll have Paul Shapiro, Vice President of Farm Animal Protection of the Humane Society of the United States, on the show to give us the latest updates of what's been happening in the animal agriculture industry in the last year. But not only that, he'll also be speaking to us about the rise in commercial plant-based food initiatives and what these mean for both the people and the animals. It's always a pleasure to hear Paul's expert knowledge and opinions on these topics that affect farmed animals. And we'll be speaking to him in about 27 minutes, so please do stay tuned. So we have another special day coming up, don't we, Elise?
Yeah, actually, March 23rd is National Puppy Day. And when you told me this, Allison, my interest was immediately piqued because I thought I'd really like to talk about an issue that's close to my heart, which is adoption of companion animals, dogs in particular. I love dogs. I grew up with dogs. I looked up some facts on shelter dogs in Canada and adoption and that sort of thing. And I found that according to the Canadian Federation of Humane Societies, shelters in Canada took in over 38,000 dogs in 2014 alone. Some of them are strays. About a third of them are surrendered by their guardians. And interestingly, 16% of the dogs taken in were puppies. I know a lot of people tend to think that.
Wow, I wouldn't have thought that.
I know, right? A lot of people think that it's only older dogs or whatever that that are admitted to shelters. But yeah, 16% are puppies. And sadly, you know, a good percentage of these, fewer than half, get adopted. But in 2014, 11% of the dogs taken into Canadian shelters, that's about 4,200 dogs, were killed. They were euthanized. This was actually the lowest percentage in a number of years. It's been higher in the past. So thankfully, I think more and more people are adopting or are coming to shelters to claim their dogs who have been lost. So this is interesting. I was hoping that the two of you could share your thoughts on this or...
Well, you know, what I wanted to say was that, you know, puppies are hard work.
Mm-hmm.
And that statistic is very high. But I think a lot of people get quite romantic about the idea of having a little fuzzy Labrador retriever for their child. And they don't realize that really in the first months of having a little puppy, you will have to take that puppy outside anywhere from 8 to 12 times a day.
Right.
Or else it will be peeing on your carpet,
mm-hmm,
and on your linoleum and everywhere else that you don't want it to go. And it is going to chew everything. But
right,
it is especially going to chew the things that smell like you,
mm-hmm,
which means your shoes
yeah,
and all your favorite
seem
things.
You seem to have a lot of experience in this area.
I do indeed. And so I think it just, people really need to think, am I ready for that commitment?
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know where that dog is now. Now, when I rescued puppies, I got a skipping rope. I tied them to my waist. I knew where that puppy was at all times. They came with me. So I didn't allow those accidents to happen by and large. And therefore, the puppies didn't get habituated to doing the wrong thing. So just that first 3 or 4 months is such a huge commitment. And just because they're small doesn't mean there's not much to it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. I think, any dog who you're bringing into your home for the first time or any animal is going to take some time to adjust and get trained and everything. But yeah, puppies in particular, a lot of work. And I think you're right. A lot of people, especially when they buy from breeders or from pet stores, they tend to buy puppies impulsively. You know, you go in there and they're very cute and, let's get a puppy. That'll be fun. But it's extremely important, obviously, to make sure that you've done your research and you're prepared. And it's interesting, you know, I think obviously the population in Canada is much smaller than in the U.S. You know, there were 38,000 dogs in shelters in 2014 in Canada, but in the U.S., approximately 3.9 million dogs enter U.S. shelters every year, and each year about 1.2 million of those dogs are euthanized, again, because they don't get adopted. So, I found this interesting as well. Apparently, 25% of the dogs in shelters are purebreds, according to the Humane Society of the U.S. That's another thing that I think is a common misconception. People tend to think, the dogs that end up in shelters are street dogs and they're all mutts and that sort of thing, which, you know, 1 out of 4 of them are purebreds. And sadly, 80% of the animals euthanized in shelters are healthy and could have been adopted into new homes. Mm-hmm. So that's
the saddest
shocking
part. And something shocking that I learned several years ago when we had Nathan Winograd on the show to do an interview. He was a very knowledgeable person. Is he said that for, I think he was counting for North American numbers, for the number of dogs that are euthanized every year, there's that many dogs that are purchased from breeders or from puppy mills and pet stores, and that's sad.
Yeah,
we need more education in that area for sure.
Absolutely, I agree. So yeah, for me, the takeaway from this is always adopt, no matter what kind of dog you're looking for, whatever kind of lifestyle you have, you can find one in a shelter or a rescue group. Even if you're looking for a specific breed, there are breed specific rescue groups everywhere in Canada and the US, wherever you live. So it's important to research all of this and hopefully rescue a dog who would otherwise be put down, even though they're healthy and would be a wonderful companion.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food, sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food, hey, even cooking food, food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad from 7 to 8 p.m.
Tune in to Fruit Salad. Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad.
Checking. Can you hear me?
Check out Fruit Salad Thursday nights from 7 to 8 p.m. highlighting queer, trans, lesbi, gay organizations, writers, performers, musicians, families, pink world news, and much, much more. Fresh fruit every show.
Tune in and queer out.
Tonight, Friday, March 18th, from 6 p.m. to 1 a.m., Food Not Bombs Vancouver is holding their annual fundraiser feast fest at the Wise Hall. Food Not Bombs is in desperate need of supplies to continue functioning in Vancouver. The lineup for the night will include local bands and visual performance artists doing their thing for you live to the music. Platters of food will be served buffet style, all vegan. Show up early to get in on that and to get in on the free gift from Lush for the first 40 people through the doors. There will be raffle prizes as well. All proceeds will go to Food Not Bombs, and all items purchased for Food Not Bombs will stay with the group for keeps. So let's keep this thing alive for good. Cover for the event tonight, again, that's at the Wise Hall, is $10, and that includes the first raffle ticket. The raffle is $5 a ticket, or $5 for $20. March 20th is Meat Out. Since 1985, activists around the world have celebrated March 20th, the first day of spring, by sharing their love of vegan food as part of a huge international event called Meat Out, which is coordinated by the Farm Animal Rights Movement, but locally hosted in communities around the world. Every year, Meat Out introduces thousands of people to the benefits of a compassionate diet for achieving great health, helping the environment, and of course, saving animals. If you want to host your own Meat Out event in your community where you can hand out free vegan food samples to help spread the vegan message, you can register your event at meatout.org. On that site, there are also resources to get you going, including financial assistance. You can really make an impact by hosting one of these events for Meat Out Day or any day of the year, because if you get even one person to go vegan, that saves 24 and a half poultry birds, 3/8 of a pig, and 346 aquatic animals in 1 year. For more information on how to organize your own Meat Out event, you can also email info@meatout.org. Also, this Sunday, join Greater Vancouver's Sea Shepherd Conservation Society volunteers for a shoreline cleanup in the Fraser Valley. Millions of pounds of garbage are dumped into the oceans every year, threatening marine wildlife who often mistake it for food, which poisons them in the process. Join us to help protect these animals and preserve the natural beauty of our backyard. This is against Vancouver Sea Shepherd. They will meet in the parking lot at the ferry crossing to Barnston Island at 11 a.m. Please try to be 10 to 15 minutes early if possible. They will ride the five-minute ferry across to the island and clean the shoreline until about 1:45 p.m. Then they'll collect all the garbage bags and make their way back over to the ferry. For more information, please email vancouver@seashepherd.org or call 778-908-1480. The Sea Shepherd will provide buckets and bags. Please bring your own drinking water, snacks, and work gloves. And of course, if you have any Sea Shepherd apparel, it's the time to show it off. So Sea Shepherd says they look forward to seeing you there. Now also FARM, the Farm Animal Rights Movement, is hosting the annual National Animal Rights Conference July 7th to 10th of this year in Los Angeles, and you can register now for the conference to get the special early bird rate of $100 for the 4 days. The deadline to get this discounted rate is Meat Out Day, March 20th, so register now.
I have registered, and I hope you too will as well, because it's an excellent, excellent conference to attend every year, and the regular rate is going to be $285, which is still a good deal. So I always get in on the early bird rate. If you want to go to the one place in North America where you can congregate with like-minded animal rights people who are doing excellent work in the world and network and learn, I learn so much when I'm there.
Cool. Very cool. So if you have an animal-related event that you would like us to share on the show, please email it to us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com or post it to our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver.
You are listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. So our first interview today is with Emily Pickett, who is the program coordinator of the Vancouver Humane Society, a local organization whose mission it is to expose animal abuse and to educate the community to end animal suffering, cruelty, and exploitation. VHS has just launched a new campaign in the city called Go Veg, and Emily is here today to tell us all about that, plus their progress in getting their Meatless Mondays campaign further into local schools. Hello, Emily, and welcome back to the Animal Voices show. Well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak about your latest campaigns to educate the community in the benefits of a meatless diet. Can you start telling us about the Go Veg campaign and the bus ads that I've been seeing around town?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me back on the show again. We launched our new Go Veg campaign earlier this week, actually, and the goal of the campaign is to raise awareness of the plight of farmed animals and to help promote cruelty-free alternatives to animal products. And Vancouver is just such a great environment for this message. There's more and more animal-friendly businesses that are opening up. And so this really just inspired us to get out there and help spread that message.
That sounds fantastic. Now, I'm just wondering what instigated this campaign. I know it's part of your mission, right, to spread awareness about animal issues. But what instigated the campaign, and what is the message that you want to convey on Why to Go Veg?
Right. Well, the message we really want to share with people is that they hold so much individual power when it comes to helping animals. And what we decide to put on our plate is so much more powerful than sometimes we realize. You know, often with animal-related issues, we have to push for laws to be updated or for industry to step up to standards. But we also need to remember that every time we sit down to eat, we can stand up for animals. And so that was really a motivating factor for us to kind of get out and help spread that message. And the message that we want to convey, this is the message that we want to convey through our outreach efforts, so through our bus ads, which we've become known for in Vancouver over the last few years. And right now, we're running a bus ad in Vancouver that features a pig and the message, "Go Veg, Every Meal Matters." So it just really drives that message home. And we've previously run similar ads. One that was really popular was one that featured a pig and a dog, and then the message, "Food," above the pig, and then "Friend" above the dog, and the question, "Why?" Which really aims to get people to think about, why do we choose to love one animal but eat the other? And that ad had a lot of success, a lot of public comment. I'm receiving a lot of positive feedback about this new ad as well.
Yeah, I love the new ad. I love the previous ad as well, because they're on the back of the buses, so they make such an impact. I saw one last week when I was driving, and that's the picture that I posted on my Facebook that got so many likes. So obviously people are noticing this, and that's great. So I want to talk about the Go Veg booklet that you've put out. It's a beautiful 12-page full-color booklet. What are your plans for getting it out there into the community? And please tell us what's in it.
Yeah, we're really excited about our new Go Veg booklet, which, as far as we're aware, is the only current Canadian-focused booklet that's out there right now. So we wanted it to contain a lot of important information. So it contains details about the realities of how animals are raised for food, and it features individual stories and photos of rescue farm animals, alternatives to animal products that you can find in Canadian grocery stores, as well as really great veg recipes and an awesome sample meal plan to try out too. We really wanted it to be meant to be directed to everyone. The photos aren't graphic, which is kind of why we wanted to focus on individual animals and rescued animals. And the message is really empowering. The recipes are super easy and really delicious. And given the sheer number of animals being raised and killed for food every year in Canada, as well as the current state of our environment and public health, all of these things relating to the farming of animals and our consumption of them, there's really no better time than now to share this message and to really just help empower people in making that change.
So these are wonderful looking booklets. I'm wondering, are you organizing or encouraging public leafleting events with the booklet?
Yeah, absolutely. A really effective way of spreading that message is through leafleting. You know, just a few people can reach hundreds of others with detailed information about, you know, the hows and whys of going veg, even in just an hour. And in fact, our outreach team has already hit the streets with our new veg booklet, and volunteers handed out over 500 booklets in the very first day, which we were really proud of and people were really receptive to. And we're actively recruiting for our outreach team as well. So we're looking to be doing more leafleting actions moving forward too.
Annalise has a question for you now.
Yeah. Hi, Emily. Elise here. So can you please tell us about your work with local secondary and post-secondary schools in implementing Meatless Mondays into their food service systems? And what has VHS achieved so far with this program?
Yeah, our Meatless Monday program is also fairly new. We started the campaign because we felt it was really important to reach out to those who haven't necessarily tried or maybe considered eating meatless, and it's a really great intro to eating veg. It's also a really popular movement globally and has experienced a lot of success in schools and communities elsewhere. So we wanted to give it a try here, and people have been really receptive to it, and we're really excited about that. Within the last year, we've helped several secondary and post-secondary schools implement their own Meatless Monday initiatives in their cafeterias, and we're currently working with several others that are looking to do the same as well. And sort of how it works, VHS plays a supportive role in helping schools that are interested in joining the Meatless Movement. So what we generally do is we'll go into the school and do a presentation to students or student clubs, and the response has been really great. Pretty much immediately after the presentations, the students are really eager to find out how they can bring the initiative to their own cafeterias. And VHS sort of supports the students in making that happen. So we'll share recipes, we'll work with food service providers and school administrators, and we've also helped in designing and offering promotional materials because we realize, school budgets are pretty limited and we want to help the schools bring the food, the menu items in, but also just promote them. So the result has been really positive. The participating schools have added some really incredible plant-based options to their menus, like mushroom burgers, pasta dishes, stir fries, falafel wraps, like all amazing stuff. And they've seen a real interest from students in eating more humanely, healthfully, and sustainably. And our most recent school that joined us actually has already reported that their cafeteria sales have increased since implementing Meatless Monday as well.
So, Emily, this is Caroline, and I'm wondering if you're talking about the Eric Humber Environmental Club and what they did in their school there. Can you talk a little bit about how they ended up becoming interested in this and approaching you? And because they took some extraordinary steps there, and they've had a real success story.
Yeah, they did. They actually were put in touch with us through another school that we were working with. The Environmental Club at Eric Humber got in touch with that school, and they were looking for a project to take on. So this other school said, we're looking at Meatless Monday. You should get in touch with the Vancouver Humane Society and learn more about it. And they did, and they've just, really owned that project, and they've done a fantastic job at implementing their own Meatless Monday campaign. They polled the student body to find out what menu items they would be interested in. They worked really closely with myself, their food service provider, and their principal to really find out what would work, keep it positive, adding lots of awesome options for students. They've done a great job at promoting it as well, and that's the school that has since seen those cafeteria sales increase too.
Wow. Now, is there you mentioned that they got this idea from another school that they were referred. Is there some kind of an online forum, or is it your forum that you're providing that these kids from different school are actually starting to talk to each other and share ideas?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if just the two students in the two separate environmental clubs knew each other or how they sort of got in touch. I'm guessing maybe the environmental clubs communicate with each other. But now we really want to also offer a place where people can come to our website and learn about Meatless Monday. We've designed a new toolkit that we just put up last week as well to teach students sort of like, what's the process, step one all the way through, and what do we need to do, what's involved, so they can kind of plan ahead and know what they're getting, what they're taking on. And so we really hope that toolkit will just help more schools in implementing their own initiatives as well.
So very quickly here, if people want to get involved, if they want to help out, they want to help out with either Go Veg, handing out leaflets or whatnot, or with Meatless Mondays, who should they contact? How should they contact you?
Yeah, so whether you're a student looking to get your school on board or you're an individual looking for plant-based recipes, we're here to help. Same with our Go Veg campaign. We're, like I said, actively recruiting leafleting volunteers. And if you can't take part in leafleting actions, you can still help spread that message. You can order the booklets through our office, share them with your friends, family, put them out at your favorite local spots. And we always need donations to help us run these campaigns. So if any of that interests anyone, they can check out our website at vancouverhumane.ca to learn more and to get in touch with us.
Well, thank you so much, Emily, for coming on the show today to speak about the Vancouver Humane Society's new Go Veg campaign and your Meatless Monday campaign and spreading the vegan message throughout the community and into the schools. To find out more about VHS's work, you can visit their website at vancouverhumane.ca, and you can also find specific links to the resources mentioned in this interview on our website at animalvoices.org. Thanks for the good work you're doing, Emily. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you.
That was Emily Pickett at the Vancouver Humane Society, and we have some news for you now.
Stunning move this week. SeaWorld has agreed to stop bringing captive orca whales, meaning its 28 orcas will be the last generation to be owned by the company. And I say owned in quotes, of course. SeaWorld also said it would end orca shows at all its entertainment parks in 2019. They made the announcement Thursday morning in a joint statement with the Humane Society of the United States, which negotiated with the company over the past few months to craft the new policy. Now, the company will phase out its Shamu shows at all three of its U.S. parks and replace them with presentations focused on animals' natural environment, and it will neither receive orca whales from foreign parks nor send whales to them, including parks it hopes to open in Asia and the Middle East. So instead of breeding orcas, SeaWorld will now invest $50 million over 5 years to increase its focus on rescue and rehabilitation of marine animals in distress and bring attention to rescued animals that cannot be released to raise awareness of their plight and educate the public to the growing threats of marine life. I think it's important to add on that note that these whales are not going free and they'll still be kept, you know, basically in these bathtubs, and they will, you know, continue to probably have a lot of the same ailments that they do now. So a step forward, but certainly not out of the woods for these orcas.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's important to keep pushing. Like you said, it's a step in the right direction, but the work is not done. So One Green Planet reported this week that Meeting Place magazine, which describes itself as a community where meat and poultry processors and their suppliers come together every day, just ran a cover story in their March 2016 issue dedicated to the plant-based meat substitute market. The in-depth feature accurately points out that meat alternatives aren't just for vegans or vegetarians. Increasingly, even meat lovers are looking for other protein options. It also states it will be up to meat processors to determine whether they can address the market with their own products, the reasons consumers are looking for alternatives, or choose to enter the market for these products themselves. The feature acknowledges that it is time for the meat industry to understand the plant-based space and to do something, citing several sources indicating plant-based proteins and vegetables are the top trends for 2016. It goes on to explain that both restaurants and retailers are jumping onto this trend. The article highlights companies like Impossible Foods, Modern Meadow, and Beyond Meat that are either using plant-based ingredients or culturing actual bovine cells to manufacture food that mimics the taste and mouthfeel of meat. As if that weren't enough, it also features a Q&A with founder and president of Gardein, Yves Potvin, who explains that the plant protein market has genuinely evolved, especially over the last decade, bringing new dimensions of taste and texture to the table. So this is pretty huge, a meat industry magazine encouraging meat producers to get on the plant-based meat market.
It's That's excellent
Very
news.
Interesting.
Yeah. Now, going down under here, we have excellent news from New Zealand, and they have set an incredible precedent by legally ruling that animals are sentient and have feelings. This marks, obviously, a huge shift in public perception, where previously only some animals were given the benefit of protection. The animal welfare bill that passed last month will prosecute people in animal cruelty cases and ban animal research and testing. And all hunting and the capture of wild animals will also be illegal. That's just incredible. So to say that animals are sentient is to state explicitly that they can experience both positive and negative emotions, including pain and distress, said Virginia Williams, chair of the National Animal Ethics Advisory Committee. This explicitness is what is new and marks another step along the animal welfare journey. So that's really exciting. No hunting, no research, no capture of wild animals. Now we just need to think about all the sheep. That, you know, we still have this bifurcation in between certain animals and the animals that we consider food. So I'm hoping that this will be the slippery slope of animal advocacy, and that eventually people's minds will make another huge shift to all animals.
Right.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
Our feature interview today is with Paul Shapiro. He is the Vice President of Farm Animal Protection of the Humane Society of the United States, and it's his fourth attendance with us on our annual Meat Out show. We're pleased that he's back this year to talk about trends around meat consumption reduction, and he will report on farmed animal rights and welfare news. Hello, Paul, and welcome back to Animal Voices.
Yeah, Allison, it's great to be back.
Oh, this is Caroline. You and I spoke by email.
Oh, hi, Caroline. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's...
You're the intro to the show.
Oh, that's just fine. You know, in 2016, it's never been more easy to go meat-free. There's so many products on the market to help people transition towards plant-based living. But yet I hear again and again from people about these cravings for eggs and cheese. So why don't you tell us about some of the great stuff that you're seeing on the shelves these days to help people with those cravings and help them make the transition?
Oh, it has never been easier to enjoy plant-based eating. I remember when I became a vegan 22 years ago, you would go into a supermarket, they would have nothing. If you asked them if they had anything vegan, they would look at you with a blank stare. If anything, they thought that you were saying you were from Vegas. And now you walk into Walmart and Kroger and Safeway and Albertsons, and you just see this proliferation of vegan options, from creamy milks to stretchy cheeses to plant-based meats that make the veg chicken of 10, 15 years ago look like an embarrassment. It is a real revolution. In fact, there's so much of a revolution going on in this right now that the current issue of Meeting Place magazine, that's M-E-A-T, a meat industry magazine called Meeting Place, has a front cover feature on the soaring popularity of animal-free meat and how they're luring more and more investors. So the future is looking more and more like it's going to be a plant-based future as Americans continue to eat less meat. And as North Americans and really Europeans as well continue to eat less and less meat and enjoy more and more plant-based proteins.
That's right. And, you know, I was just reading that the industry right now, we're looking at $5 billion of total food that is plant-based that is being consumed. So this is like more than a few tofu dogs. This is big business. And with the World Health Organization's statement recognizing the connectedness between cancer and the consumption of certain meats, I can only see this growing. And in fact, I've been reading that there's even talk of having a plant-based food producers trade organization. And so my question is America going plant-based? Who's consuming all this cruelty-free food?
Well, first and foremost, there is now the first ever trade association in Washington for the plant-based food industry, which is a great first step, because you know that the beef producers, the pork producers, the egg producers, they are all in Washington lobbying, and it's about time that the Tofurkies and Gardeins and Beyond Meats of the world also had their lobby in Washington. So it's a great sign that plant power is getting more powerful in the nation's capital. At the same time, to answer your question directly, there is this huge uptick in demand for plant-based proteins, these non-dairy milks, these plant-based eggs, plant-based meats. And the great irony of it is that they're being marketed not toward vegetarians, not toward vegans, but to meat eaters. Because while the percentage of Americans who are vegetarian has remained roughly stable for the last couple decades, the percentage of Americans who are seeking to eat less meat has gone way up, way up. And so now the big market for products like Gardein and like Beyond Meat are meat eaters who want to eat less meat. And in fact, Americans are now eating on a per-person basis 10% less meat today than we were in 2007. Meat consumption continues to decline on a per-person basis in the country, and that's largely because of these omnivores who are doing things like maybe a meatless Monday, they're taking a weekly holiday for meat, or maybe they're doing what Mark Bittman suggests, which is his vegan before 6 p.m. plan, or they're doing like what Bill Clinton does, which is essentially for most of his life, vegan before 6 p.m. and vegan after 6 p.m. So the range is very broad, but what's clear is that Americans are eating less meat.
Mm-hmm. And of late, we've got this equation of cultured meat. So basically, this is meat grown in a lab and not derived from a living animal with a central nervous system. So we're talking about real cruelty-free food here that tastes and I guess looks like meat. But are we ready for petri dish meat? And will the farms of the future be turned into magnificent laboratories? And if so, will farmers wear lab coats?
That's so funny. So first of all, I agree with you. It is cruelty-free meat. And second of all, it doesn't just look and taste like meat. It is meat. It is anatomically identical. We're already doing this with certain human tissues. Like we can grow various organs in a lab, and the goal is to be able to transplant them into your body. And you're not getting a fake liver. You're getting a real liver that was grown in a lab. Same time, if you can grow organs, why can't you grow muscle? That's what meat is. It is muscle. And so if we can do that, you could theoretically grow the entire world's meat supply from one cell, from one animal. The way this works, this so-called cultured meat, is that you would take a biopsy from an animal. You don't have to kill her. You don't have to harm him. All you have to do is take a biopsy. And from that, in a lab, you can then grow huge amounts of meat. Now, we're not at that point yet. This isn't a product that's going to be commercialized for several years, most likely, but there is a race among companies now, like Memphis Meat, Modern Meadow, Mosa Meat, and others, who are now racing to become the first company to put cultured meat and cultured leather onto the market. I am very optimistic about this. I think it portends wonderful things. It has a great opportunity to reduce an enormous amount of animal suffering and animal slaughter. And frankly, I don't really care if vegans or vegetarians eat it. That's not the goal. The goal is for people who eat animals to shift to this type of a meat because it will spare huge numbers of animals from being tortured and killed on factory farms and inside of slaughter plants.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's so interesting. I'm wondering, would you take it on? Would you try it? Or have you done so?
And not only would I try it, I have tried it. So at Modern Meadow, which is a startup that's culturing meat in Brooklyn, they have cultured meat that while I was there, I did sample. I don't have any ethical qualms about it. I don't really care to eat meat, to be honest with you. I haven't eaten it in over two decades, as I mentioned. But I did want to try it, and I hope that others will do so, especially people who are meat eaters, so they can try it. I don't think there's any ethical concern about it whatsoever. I don't really have a big desire for it myself, but I'm happy for it to become commercialized, and I would love to see the American population shifting, and in fact the global population shifting to that type of protein consumption. And just to give it a little bit of perspective, you know, these are basically like breweries. I mean, they're just culturing, just in the same way you culture beer or you might culture yogurt. Lots of products that involve culturing that people eat on a regular basis. And this is just the next step in that process.
So fascinating. And we're going to be following that really closely and watching that race to the shelves. So just switching gears for a minute here, I wanted to look at some of your ag gag laws. And we've got a fantastic quote here from Jim Hightower, who served as Texas's former, he was a Texas former agriculture commissioner. And of course, in that respect, always defending big ag. And he's been recently speaking out against the anti-whistleblower laws. And he said, and I quote, "The only reason the public knows about chickens being stomped to death and pregnant sows being driven insane because they're caged so tightly they can't even turn around is that courageous whistleblowers have secretly recorded the videos of the intolerable violence." And so right now in the United States, these laws are wending their ways through the courts, and appreciating the fact that these laws do happen state by state, what generally is happening in the U.S. on these types of legislation?
Well, there have been dozens of ag gag bills in the United States. These are these bills intended to silence whistleblowers, to prevent undercover investigations at factory farms and slaughter plants. But just because there have been dozens of bills does not mean there are that many ag gag laws. In fact, you could pretty much count all the ag gag laws in the country on one hand. And that's because the Humane Society of the United States has led this fight to kill these bills while they are pending in the state legislatures. But it does speak volumes about how desperate the meat industry is to keep Americans in the dark, that it wants to make it a crime not to abuse animals, but to take a photo or a video of someone else abusing animals. So the ag-gag fight continues in our country. There were still more bills that were pending this year, and they really show an industry that knows that its standard industry practices are simply indefensible. Just imagine how bad practices must be if their purveyors want to make it illegal to document them. So that's where we stand right now. And to have the former Secretary of Agriculture of Texas, a huge agriculture state, condemning these ag gag whistleblower suppression laws really speaks volumes about the fact that many, even within the agricultural industry, are recognizing the folly of trying to cover up the inherent cruelty that is occurring in America's meat, egg, and dairy industries.
Yeah, I almost fell off my chair when I read that statement, actually. I thought it was absolutely brilliant to hear it, and good for him for speaking out. Let's move on now. I just wanted to talk about some of the really topical stuff that's happening with your grocery stores right now. Kroger's, Albertsons, I think Safeway, they've decided to go 100% cage-free in terms of their chickens. And egg producer J.S. West has followed suit. So what does this mean for chickens?
Well, 9 out of 10 of the egg-laying chickens in both Canada and in America right now are basically locked inside of battery cages. These are cages so cramped the birds have less space than an iPad on which to live for their entire lives. Now, many of the biggest grocery chains in both Canada and the United States are announcing that they want to go 100% cage-free with all of their egg purchases. Now, admittedly, cage-free does not mean cruelty-free. The birds still don't go outside, and there's other animal welfare concerns, but it is a substantial improvement. Cage-free birds have more space than their caged counterparts. They can walk, they can perch, they can lay their eggs in nests, they can engage in important natural behaviors that are denied to caged hens. And there's a cage-free revolution that is rocking the egg industry right now, both through the enactment of laws to require a ban on battery cages and through these corporate policies from the grocers like and the egg producers, like you're mentioning, who are saying they're going all cage-free. And so practices that have been emblematic of factory farming in the past, like battery cages for chickens, gestation crates for pigs, veal crates for calves, these emblematic symbols of factory farming are now finally, deservedly going by the wayside. And I would predict that within a decade, the only battery cages or gestation crates that you're going to be able to find are in the only place that they actually belong, which is a museum.
Hi, Paula. It's Allison here. So I'm wondering, cage-free, it sounds a lot better than in cages, but as you said, it doesn't mean cruelty-free, and the chickens are still exploited terribly, and they're de-beaked, and they're completely spent until they stop laying eggs, and then they're brutally slaughtered. So what do you think, what is your prediction of what it would take to get these chickens not only out of cages, but out of the egg-laying business completely?
Well, companies that Hampton Creek, which HSUS's Josh Falk co-founded, are doing a great job at helping to slash demand for these eggs. So through the production, for example, of egg-free mayonnaise and egg-free cookies and other processed foods that have eggs in them that they're helping companies remove their eggs from, that's a great way to help ensure that we can reduce demand for this cruel product.
Hi, Paul. Elise here. So right now there's a ballot or a bill of some sort in Massachusetts to get rid of some of the most inhumane factory farming practices. Can you tell us a little more about that?
I would love to. In Massachusetts, they are considering a ballot measure that the Humane Society of the U.S. has spearheaded that we hope voters will vote on it this November, and it would ban battery cages, ban veal crates, ban gestation crates, and require that any eggs, pork, or veal that are sold in the state meet that same retail standard as well. So it's a big lift. It's a very historic and precedent-setting law that I'm confident Massachusetts voters are going to support this November. There's a huge coalition of animal protection organizations that are united in waging this campaign for the purpose of winning it. It also has the support of the United Farm Workers and other labor rights organizations, food safety groups, environmental groups, and more. And I think what you're going to see is as we come into election season, this national debate that is being had about factory farming will be focused on Massachusetts. Massachusetts will become the epicenter of the national dialogue about how we treat farm animals. So keep your eyes trained for the Bay State, that's what we call Massachusetts in the U.S., and look to see how voters decide, because they're going to be barraged with advertisements from the agribusiness industry intended to deceive them about the measure.
They're under so much pressure, aren't they, from Big Ag? Yeah. So, Paul, I'm just wondering, you know, some people say that when they go plant-based, basically it happens to them like a lightning bolt, and they become vegan and they become an animal rights activist. And other people take these transitional steps. And in psychology, the staged approach, there's a term for it called successive approximation. So basically we're taking these smaller steps towards this larger goal, but it's unlikely for a lot of people to go direct from practicing Omni to a hardcore vegan. They take these steps along this way. How do you think that links in with the Meat Out campaigns and the Meatless Monday concepts?
Well, one of the reasons I'm such a big fan of Meatless Monday is because it helps people dip their toe into meatless eating. Very few people are believers in all or nothing. Most people think about easing their way in, kind of leaning into a new lifestyle. And for people who have eaten a certain way for decades, it can be jarring to try to change everything overnight. And so I can't tell you how many people I've talked with who tell me that, you know, they started with a Meatless Monday, they really enjoyed it, they got used to eating meatless, and then they decided, well, I like Meatless Monday, well, I like Tofu Tuesday now, or maybe they started thinking they're going to do vegan before 6 p.m. like Mark Bittman, and so on. And so people move at their own pace. Some people will go overnight, other people will take them longer, but I'm a firm believer that we should applaud people for making progress. We should applaud people for taking their first step rather than punishing them for not yet taking their last step. And indeed, there's really no such thing as a last step, because all of us agree that continuous improvement is what we ought to be seeking. No matter where we are on the spectrum, we can always strive to be doing better, certainly myself included. So things like Meatless Monday are a very good step that ought to be applauded, and the Meat Out is a great way for people to get started celebrating the manifold benefits of plant-based eating.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me that a lot of people don't even know that they can get through a day without meat. And so when they do get through a Meatless Monday without the meat, they think, wow, I'm okay. And then maybe Tuesday is okay. I'll be okay on Tuesday as well. So we all need to start somewhere.
I totally agree. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I have met who have made comments to me saying, oh, I could never even go one day without meat. Well, here's a way to prove that you can, and that it's enjoyable. And no, you don't need to do all or nothing. You can try it out. See how you like it, and experiment. See what foods you enjoy. See what foods you don't enjoy, frankly. And that's why I'm such a big believer in Meatless Mondays and similar campaigns.
I absolutely agree. And, you know, I understand that a number of school districts are switching to Meatless Mondays now. And when you look at the numbers of the school and the numbers of the children and thus the numbers of the meal involved, the impact of having just one day a week to be meatless isn't so small anymore. So what do you kind of see as approximate the long-term results of such meatless days?
Well, numerous school districts are engaging in Meatless Monday. So, for example, Los Angeles School District and others are now doing entirely meat-free meals for all of their students. So if you think about the Los Angeles School District, it's gigantic, 700,000 meals served every single school day. And that's a huge amount. 700,000 meals now every school day are entirely vegetarian in Los Angeles from K through 12 because of that one policy. And many of those students are more likely, after learning how they enjoy plant-based eating, to take it when they go home for dinner and ask for meat-free meals, or maybe when they go out to eat, they'll be looking for it. And we're going to be conducting, at the Humane Society of the United States, we're going to be conducting a study pretty soon looking at the impact, if any, of these institutional Meatless Monday policies on the behavior of students and other cafeteria customers when they leave the cafeteria.
Mm-hmm. We just had Emily Pickett from the Vancouver Humane Society on, and she made a mention of the fact that some of the students from one school were talking to the students from another school. And I thought, what a great idea to have these, to have some kind of a network set up so that these kids can talk to each other about their experiences and share the successes and share what they did and their menu items and have a little bit of a collective effort there.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'm a big fan of Emily's. Please tell her I say hi next time you talk with her.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And my experience is similar to hers, that it does, the benefits of these programs don't stop at the cafeteria.
And a lot of these kids would be bringing this information home to their parents as well and saying, let's do this at home.
Yeah, I know many people who have told me that they have students, that they have kids who in school saw something about this and came home, and how they've impacted their own parents as well. And they've said that they have reduced their meat consumption because their daughter or their son came home and was raving to them about how good veggie burgers were at the school or whatever it was that they were serving.
I've just got one last quick question for you here. We're almost out of time. We've got World Water Day coming up March 22nd next week. And as many of us know, animal agriculture uses a massive amount of water that isn't available thus for other purposes. So can you talk just briefly on the topic of how much water is being used in animal agriculture and why this destination, in your opinion, is misguided?
Animal ag is a huge water user. In fact, for World Water Day, which the United Nations runs, the very first recommendation they give is to replace meat with another source of protein because it's so inefficient to use all of that water. In California, where we've had a massive drought that Californians have been suffering from for many years now, what's happened has been that people are being asked to take shorter showers, or they're being asked to conserve water in other ways. But think about it. One chicken, just to bring one chicken from shell to shelf, takes more water than 6 months worth of showers. So what would you rather do? Skip showers for 6 months, or take shorter showers and just opt for plant-based foods rather than eating chicken? The evidence is clear. If we care about animal welfare, if we care about water usage, if we care about public health, climate change, or so many other important issues, we ought to be eating a more plant-based diet.
And there's just so many people that really don't even have any fresh water at all, and yet we're routing this through this animal. And, of course, that waste is going into the waterways, which many of us know, and causing a great deal of environmental pollution.
Indeed. It's an extremely inefficient, wasteful, and polluting way to produce food for ourselves. And that's one of the reasons why Meat Out is so important, because it's a great way that each person can make a difference, that every single time we sit down to eat, we can stand up for better treatment of animals, for better treatment of our planet, and for better health ourselves. Simply by enjoying more plant-based meals, the impact we can have on ourselves and on the world around us is tremendous.
Oh, it's so true. Thank you, Paul, for joining us to share your insights around animal agriculture and trends toward eating less meat. To find out more about the work that Paul does for farm animal protection, please visit the website at humanesociety.org. Thank you again, Paul.
It's my honor and pleasure to be on. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for that interview, Caroline. So again, Meat Out is coming up on March 20th. If you want to learn more about how to participate or how to host your own Meat Out event, visit meatout.org. You've been listening to Animal Voices here on 100.5 FM Vancouver Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, unceded Coast Salish territories. Please join us here next Friday, March 26th at noon for our special Easter show. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Visit our website at animalvoices.org, where you can stream past shows or download them as podcasts. You can also see our show blog there with detailed links and subscribe to us on iTunes. Stay in touch with us on Facebook, facebook.com/animalvoicesvancouver, and on Twitter at animalvoicesyvr. We are currently looking for volunteers to produce, co-host, operate the control room, help with website maintenance, and more. Co-op Radio is 100% volunteer run, and that includes Animal Voices. So if you have skills and interest in any of these areas, as well as a passion for animal advocacy, please do drop us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. Training will be provided in all of these areas if you're not experienced. So now we'll leave you with a song. Coming up is No Bones, No Blood by Jaw Sun, Russ Attitude, and Luton Faya. Thank you for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.
You're gonna treat a vegan way, you know?
Attitude on Jaw Sun.
You're gonna Luton Faya, Jaw Sun, and Russ Attitude.
Tell them Luton. All you for kill for eat.
For real, King Man.
But them say swine and them dinner.
So when I got no knowing dead, you know?
Fire,
treat the toughest way. No bones, no blood in the kitchen. We're not gonna mix up in the vampire living. No bones, no blood in the kitchen. Enough of them no show no respect for life. Run, here come the butcher man when he caught me with his knife. I'm more pain, I'm more death, I bear murder. Life didn't take for them steak and hamburger. They raid the plants and seed in the mud. Then to take you some fresh in bubbles of blood. Carnivore, stop fighting it, stop fighting it. Hey, give vital life a try, you just might get some enlightenment. And this the one full of all of my vegetarians. Raw food isn't vegans and all the vegetarians. Yo, cause I and I not put on it. You know it's simple. Humbleness, we have to live life simple. To put some food upon the plate. I mean, I need no hook, mean I need no bait. I unite the roots, my food, me not fish shoot. I give me vegetable and some fruit. Make us a
no bones, no blood in our kitchen.
We not gonna mix up in a vampire living.
No bones, no blood in our kitchen.
Stop from look up in a them health book page. Vegetarian will always live. Cause everything we eat it always positive. And everything you drink it never yet negative. You are what you eat, that's why you walk like pig. You are what you eat, that's why you like pig. You treat your body wrong, you wanna brave, you are dish. Yo, don't panic, cause I'm organic. Beer soy soup in my kitchen, yes, I got it. Yo, don't panic, cause I'm organic. Lentil peas in my soup, I got it. Yo, don't panic, cause I'm organic. Vegan life, me live and none of them can stop me. Calabash, okra and squash, yes, me got them. Ready for go boil it and stop.
No bones, no blood in the kitchen. Marijuana make me slippers. No pork chops in my fritters.